go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, Scott.
Hey. You know what? We got a topic today that we're just going to jump right into it because I think a lot of people are misinformed, I think, about the Autobahn.
Sure, yeah. And we're talking about the Autobahn today, which a lot of people associate with. Well, let's go ahead and get it out of the way. One of the big things. A lot of people who are not fortunate enough to have driven on the Autobahn.
Me being one of them.
Yeah.
I've never been there. Have you?
No, I flew over it.
Oh, okay.
I don't think that counts.
Okay.
But the problem that comes up here, the misconception rather, is that the Autobahn is this one particular Shangri-La of speeding. It's like this one huge stretch of road where almost anything goes speed limit wise, because there is no speed limit. Now we're going to do a little bit of, what would you call this?
Bubble bursting.
Maybe bubble bursting, maybe, but it's not all bad news.
No, it's not all bad news by any means. There's some good news in here. We'll mix it up a little bit, but just kind of dispelling some of the rumors about the Autobahn that you might have heard throughout the years. I know that I have. I was one who thought it was just, you know, every bit of that road was all out as fast as you can go. It's not uncommon to see people going 200 miles an hour all the time.
Right.
That's what you get the impression of when, and it's like a racetrack.
Yes.
You get the impression that it's a racetrack.
And here, we'll go ahead and set this straight. Think of Autobahn as, now this isn't quite correct, but think of Autobahn as just a synonym for highway system.
Correct.
Right. Because the Autobahn is actually a term that means, or that describes a series of roads across Germany, sort of the way we have an interstate system. And this Autobahn, it's kind of a big deal. It's the third largest system of its kind in the world, right? Like,
That's big.
United States is the biggest. China is the second largest. And then we've got Germany.
Yeah. They've got, what, 8,000 miles of roadway is what they say?
Yeah.
8,000 plus miles, I believe. But it's really, I mean, like you said, Ben, it's just a federal roadway system that was laid out by the German government. And honestly, there's nothing that mystical about it. But there are sections that are, they're unlimited speed. Not nearly as much as you might think, though. You probably already know this because you've looked into this. So I guess we should just let the cat out of the bag. How much of it is actually unlimited speed?
Less than half. About a third?
I was going to say between a third and 25%.
Yeah.
So really, it's a small part of it. I know that's still a lot of roadway. That's still a good 2,000 miles.
Yeah.
When you think about it that way, I mean, or more. But even that is limited to the conditions. I mean, so let's say that you've got an unlimited speed area. I believe that they can even be backed down if it falls under construction. If it's improper or not improper, if it's the weather conditions don't allow you to speed. Let's say it's snowing in that part of the road, or it's raining,
or there are people who are merging in, or you're in a heavily populated area.
Exactly, fog, things like that. It happens that not all of the parts of the road that are open to unlimited speed are always unlimited speed.
Yeah, but still, drivers, keep your eyes peeled the next time you're on the Autobahn. Because you'll see what's called a de-restriction symbol. And that means that it means what it sounds like.
Yeah.
I mean, the German's not that hard in this case.
No.
It means that you do not have a limit in this part of the road, conditions permitting.
That's right. And what does it look like? It looks like a circle with three diagonal lines through it, right? And, normally where you see the posted speed limits, you'd find a red circle, I believe, with the posted speed limit in kilometers per hour.
Yes.
And usually that falls, and I'm going to give it in miles per hour. I don't know what the kilometer, I didn't look up the kilometers per hour, but usually the speed limits are between, get this, these are posted limits on the Autobahn.
Right.
Typically between 40 and 100 miles per hour. That's the posted speed limits. Most areas falling into the 80 mile per hour zone.
Oh, I've got the kilometers if you want.
Oh, great, sure.
That 40 to 100 mph translates to about 64.4 to 160.9 kilometers per hour.
Okay, very good. So if you're looking at your speedometer right now, trying to figure out what that would be, take a look at how far up the dial that would be, because 100 miles per hour, that's still pretty quick. You got to admit that.
Yeah.
But when you get into these unrestricted zones, or these what do you say, deregulation?
De-restriction.
De-restriction. Okay, de-restriction areas. That's when, you can really let it fly.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to be honest here, Ben. I've seen over the years, I like YouTube,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
I fall right into this trap where I like to look at videos of people that people have taken while they're on the Autobahn, because it seems like someone who gets on the Autobahn with, fast car, Lamborghini, mm-hmm, even a Corvette or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
They have to push it all the way to the limit, as fast as they can make that car go.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, a lot of them have taped the in-car experience of that happening. And
I'm sorry.
I watch, they've got a passenger who's taping or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I watch it, but you just don't get the sensation of speed from inside the car. Not like the in-car cameras that are actually just outside the car, maybe down at the road. Height,
yeah,
or the car passing somebody at that type of speed, you just don't get the same feel. I'm sure it's exciting for them to relive the moment or whatever.
Sure, for them to watch themselves,
yeah,
watching the road.
But when you're watching a driver shift through the gears and saying, "Oh, here we are at 170, 180, 190," they count up. It's
yeah,
like it's still kind of cool, but to know that they're going that fast, but mm-hmm, you just don't get the sensation.
And let's see. We'll get to some. I've got some pretty fun stuff that we have on the website. But before we do that, we should probably talk about a little bit more myth busting with the Autobahn.
Oh, sure.
Okay. One thing. So we've established that it is true that there are parts of the German highway system, federal motor system at least, where a driver can go as fast as they would like.
Correct.
Obviously, there are stipulations.
Yeah, sure.
And one thing that we need to add immediately after this, hopefully no one turned the podcast off and just slammed on the gas, because it turns out that the German motor laws are more severe than the U.S. laws, or
they're very strict.
Right. At least they're always strictly enforced.
Yeah.
One of we'll build toward one that I think is kind of crazy, but there are little things like if you are in the left lane, the fast lane, right, and
yeah,
you refuse to get to the right lane to let somebody behind you pass,
mm-hmm,
then you can get fined. It's actually considered coercion.
Interesting.
And the person behind you, if you are the the slow Dudley who doesn't want to get into the right lane, I made that up.
Yeah, very nice.
It's okay. We'll see how it works out. But the people who are behind you are legally allowed to honk and flash their lights to say, "Hey, buddy."
Oh, sure, the double light flash to say move over.
Achtung.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. I see that here in the States, too.
Right, but there it's legal. You're supposed to do it. Now, another one is that emergency lanes are for emergencies only, and there's a little bit of a different definition of an emergency.
Hmm.
Running out of gas, Scott, is not an excuse to be in an emergency lane, because the Germans consider it an avoidable circumstance.
Ah, very good. Very good. Very strict.
Well, I mean, it's a good point, but they are playing hardball,
mm-hmm,
I think. And then if you don't follow the 2-second rule, you remember the 2-second rule.
Yeah, we've talked about that before.
Okay, so if you don't at least...
That's where if you drop some food, you can pick it up off the table immediately and eat it, and it's still fine.
And they're very strict about that.
No, come on, what is it?
It's the
following speed, right? Following distance.
Yes.
Following distance.
At least 2 seconds of reaction time between you and the car in front of you. And if you don't do that, you can have your driver's license suspended for months.
Well,
I didn't see that one coming.
See, also very strict.
Here's a really crazy one. If you are caught eating or drinking in your car, you can get a fine.
Boo.
It's considered a distracted state.
I agree, though. It is distracted. I eat and drink in my car on the way to work and sometimes on the way home.
Yeah.
And, it is distracting, I guess, but, you get practiced at this thing. But if you're going to be going 100 miles an hour,
mm-hmm,
I don't want somebody who's trying to eat a Big Mac sandwich next to me, swerving all over the place, trying to unwrap the thing, or dropping a coffee on their lap or whatever.
Oh,
That's crazy. So I totally agree with that. Because these limits, even in the restricted areas, it's high.
Mm-hmm.
In an unlimited situation, you definitely don't want somebody who's got their eyes off the road even for 1 second.
Right. You don't want to be indirectly killed by a cheeseburger.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
You know what? That does make sense. Originally, I guess I wasn't really thinking it through, Scott, but that makes sense because going back through these rules, a lot of them are designed for a place where you would try to save the lives of people who are routinely going in excess of 100 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting thing, like the tires have to be rated for a vehicle's top speed.
I like that one.
I think we should have that one.
Yeah, that one's a great one because if you don't have the right equipment for going this type of speed, you're going to shred your tires after not very long. I mean, you're in a rental car that just can't do it, or you're in your own car that, you know, can't keep up with the Porsche that just passed you going 175 or whatever it's doing.
Yeah.
You can't sustain that for very long if you don't have the right tire speed rating. And I think that's a really good one. That's just a safety issue for everybody on the road, not only the person in the car that, you know, doesn't have or does have the tires, but everybody around them. I think it's a good idea.
Oh.
You know what?
What?
I got something about safety if you want to talk about safety for a moment.
I want to talk
about
safety.
Since we're in that vein right now. So,
yeah.
Did you know that – now, here's one that – this is kind of a fiction one, I guess. I don't know. How would you classify this? No, this is one that – you know, fact fiction type thing.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. You would think that this would be a dangerous road, right?
I would imagine so.
It's not necessarily that case. It's, you know, being unlimited speed.
Yeah.
Statistically, the Autobahn is safer than U.S. roads. You know that?
I did not know
that,
Scott.
It is. Since 1970, there's been a steady decrease in fatalities. There were, over 21,000 deaths in the year 1970. On the Autobahn, and that has been reduced to less than 4,500 in 2008.
Wow.
Steadily downward. So, you know, I guess there are three times the number of cars and miles driven on the road since that point. So, you know, this isn't just like, you know, people aren't using the road or they're not as many cars. There's actually more cars, more miles driven, and the number of deaths have gone down.
Well, let's hope they keep going.
That's because of some of these restrictions they've got in place and, you know, people just understanding I got to be more careful about things. And, you know, of course, safety in vehicles has gone way up. You know, they've got airbags and, you know, roll bar technology or, you know, cage technology that they didn't have before.
Crumple zones.
Crumple zones,
like
exactly, yeah. So there's an awful lot to these stats. But steadily, the death rate on the Autobahn has gone way, way down for the last, 38 years.
That's so interesting because when one thing that I didn't know until we really started looking into this is that the Autobahn was built for the same reasons that we built the interstate system.
Yes.
Which, you know what that was.
Exactly. Yeah, that was for the military purposes, really.
Absolutely.
Because at first there was just one road, and it really wasn't it wasn't even the Autobahn. The first automobile road in Germany was in, the early 1930s?
Yeah, 1932.
Okay, 32. So by the late 1930s, though, that's when the Nazi regime came into power, and of course Hitler, they decided that they need to get, you know, military machines of war back and forth across the country. And how better to do that than a system like what we have here in the States with the U.S. interstate system? And they created what they call the Autobahn.
And so it's sort of an eerie parallel in history there. But what we see actually here, you could almost argue that the Autobahn has a bit more efficiency to it because now I first off, let me be completely honest with you. Due to the sizes of the two countries involved, we're talking apples and oranges.
Yeah.
You know, just the geography demands certain priorities. However, when you look at the ultimate goals of these systems, which was pretty much just to provide the fastest, safest transport possible for military individuals and military equipment, then Germany kind of won with this one because even now they're reducing fatality rates. The speed is in excess of what would ever be proposed in a U.S. system, just so everybody knows. I mean, there are a couple of very fast parts of our system, but we're not ever going to have something like this until we have, you know, autonomous cars.
You're talking about the stretches out west.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, okay.
You know what it
– Yeah, I know. Yeah, we know about that. But the – yeah, I see where you're going with that. Mm-hmm. I think I don't know about more efficient or not. I don't understand that. Maybe.
Well, I guess I mean that there's they've managed to keep this unrestricted speed.
Yeah.
And they've managed to do it while reducing fatality rates.
Oh, okay.
And accident rates.
Yeah, fair enough.
Now, thankfully, there is no World War II going on, right, at this time. So we do have the ability to concentrate on safety. And I'm bringing it up a little bit. We also have an ability to concentrate on taking the best, fastest, just most cherry performance cars in the world on this road and seeing what happens.
Ah, yes. I know where you're going.
You know where I'm going?
I think I do.
You want to take us there?
I think I would. I mean, you've obviously looked into this, right?
Okay, I've looked a little bit. This guy who's an auto editor.
Yeah, so. There's a list that we have here at How Stuff Works. It's on our website. It is the top five speeds clocked on the Autobahn. So you've apparently looked into it.
I've looked into it, man. But this is...
I was going to shock you with some info there, but you know what? I'm gonna tease this a little bit for our listeners because. You may think you know the fastest car that's out there. I mean, you'd probably guess a Lamborghini, Ferrari, something like that, right?
Right, right.
I'd say you'd be way off, but that's all I'm going to say. So by the time we get down to number one, you'll be surprised.
Actually, I think that's,
number two and number one, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. But let's start at the bottom.
Fair enough. You want to start at the bottom, number five?
Sure.
Well, go ahead. What does it take to be the number five top speed on the Autobahn,
which is no small feat, right?
No,
the Corvette ZR1 clocked at 192 miles per hour. For our European friends, that's 309 kilometers.
Very nice.
Per hour.
Very nice.
So this bad boy has more than 600 horsepower. You're not going to see it that much on there. You know, it's a Corvette. You're just not going to see that as many Corvettes.
No.
And so
it's going to be a rarity in Germany.
Yes. In 2008, a team from the Dutch Autoblog took the Autobahn test with the Corvette, and they even had some traffic. They had to go through some work zones. They got it up to 192 miles an hour. Its top speed is 205.
Oh, so it could have gone a little bit faster, but it was what? But you said that, you know, this is an open road.
Yeah.
This is one where, you know, you've got people merging on and off. You've got people that are just trying to get to work. You've got people, you know, running errands.
Yeah, and people hoping they don't get pulled over for drinking coffee.
Here's somebody trying to set a speed record next to you. You may think you've seen that on the highway here, but 192, come on. I mean, that's pretty darn quick.
If you've seen that on the highway here, you have not seen it for very long.
Yeah, and that's entry level, okay?
Yeah, that's number five.
That's number five. So number four, 201.3. And you'll notice that we're kind of jumping up. Small increments here.
Mm-hmm. Small increments.
So this is number four out of top five. 201.3 miles per hour, and that was by the Rough CTR Yellowbird, which is a Porsche. And again, for our, I don't know, Canadian listeners, European listeners, 323.9 kilometers per hour.
Yeah. Yep.
And the CTR, which is really based on a 911, a Porsche 911 from 1987. Rough, you know, who's a, Rough is a, I don't know.
German car company.
Specialty car company.
Okay, you know,
They take vehicles and they make them a little bit better. Like Callaway does the Corvette and Saline does the Mustangs. This is Rough does the Porsche, okay? And I don't know. He did this in 2003, so this is a long time ago. This is you know, a good 7 years ago at this point.
Right.
James M. Clash is the guy who drove the car. Wasn't the owner, but actually was owned by I think the guy that owns the Rough car company. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Alois Rupp.
Yeah, exactly. But the Mr. Clash was the one who drove the Yellowbird, and he described it as nerve-wracking to drive 201.3 miles per hour on an open road.
Yeah.
I can imagine that would be nerve-wracking because you're just waiting for a deer or, you know, somebody to merge left right in front of you because they don't see you coming, of course. You know, you're approaching so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So now you may be surprised by number three. Not the big surprise.
Yeah.
You may be surprised by this one.
Will you do number three?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Number three was also the same guy. Yeah, that's right. The same guy. Same guy, James Clash. Mm-hmm. He drove another Rough automobile for this number three spot. And this was a different different rough. It's a rough R turbo Porsche, and a little bit smoother than the last one. He's able to get this one up to 208.7. So you're talking about just a small increase.
Yeah,
but,
like six, seven miles.
Yeah, very small increase in speed, but it had 50 more horsepower than the Yellowbird. And I guess that just allowed him to get just a little bit faster. And he did it during daylight hours, did it, you know, with other traffic all around him. Said that, you know, according to him, though, he said that driving the Yellowbird, even though it was a bit slower, was more of a driver's experience. It was a rougher feeling car. It wasn't quite as smooth as the Turbo R that he drove. So, it was more enjoyable, I guess, to drive the Yellowbird.
Yeah, you could feel the response.
Exactly. Yeah. He felt it more, I guess, than the Turbo R.
Yeah, I would never, if I'm going that fast, I want to feel every bump and curve because I don't want to be comfortable.
That's it. You want the feel of the road, right?
It ain't natural to be comfortable going that fast.
No, it's not. It's not because you're really moving at that point. Now, Ben, I'm going to let you read these, but.
Are you sure?
Yeah, of course. This is the one that's, this is exciting, right? To me it is, because you would never guess that the top two spots would be held by these vehicles.
No.
I just wouldn't think this. I mean, we've talked about, you know, some top-of-the-line cars.
Mm-hmm.
You would think that it would be a Lamborghini or Ferrari, something like that. I'll just tell you right now, it's not.
Right.
Go ahead and hit it with this. Hit us with it.
How do you want to do it? Do you want to do them one at a time?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Oh, no, you know what? Do them both at once because it's same day.
Yeah.
So I haven't given too much away.
Yeah, right. Okay. So the top speed that's clocked on the Autobahn is 268.8 miles an hour.
268 miles per hour.
Right. The top two speeds are both 268. There's a difference of 0.4 between them. And this was on the same day in, this is the part that blows my mind.
Da,
almost,
da, da.
1938.
72 years ago. 72 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This happened 72 years ago. I can't believe it. I mean, it's understandable when you hear about the conditions, I guess.
Sure,
but you don't think of a car in 1938 as being able to achieve almost 300 miles per hour on a road,
especially not our second place winner, the V16 Auto Union.
Oh, one of my favorite cars.
Really?
Yeah, these are gorgeous cars.
Yeah,
I love those cars, especially the driver of this one, Bernard Rosemeyer. Mm-hmm. They've done tribute editions of at Audi, for him, and just everything about this guy and his driver and the cars that he drove, the W16s, or the V16s rather, gorgeous cars, beautiful cars.
Oh, and note for you guys, Auto Union was the predecessor that became Audi.
Yeah, that's right. It was a conglomeration of four different automakers, and that's the four rings.
And so before Audi was even Audi, they built this car.
Yeah.
That's just amazing.
Yeah.
So they went head-to-head. Now, this is a mean machine, right?
Again, same day.
Yeah, V16 engine, 400 horsepower. It's the
Formula One cars of the day.
Yes.
That's what it is.
That's a good way
These
to
are
say
purebred
it.
Race cars. These are made only for racing. They're not a street car, obviously. I mean, 1932, you're not going 300 miles an hour in anything else. Except a race car, but these are on the same exact day this happens.
Now,
and the conditions are so unusual.
The conditions are unusual, but before we go into the conditions, do you wanna say what the winner was, who the big daddy was?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean you should do it.
Oh, okay. This was Rudolf Caracciolo. Is that what you're getting at? The winner? Or are you talking about
the first?
Are you talking about what happened on that day? Because yikes.
Let's see what happened on the day.
Okay, you got it. The number two, you know, this is the day that Bernard Rosemeyer he broke the speed record on this day with his speed, the 268.432, and so it's just fractions of a second less than the other guy in the Mercedes, right?
Yes.
That day he had just made a run in this V16 car, 400 horsepower, car designed by Porsche.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have enough downforce to stay on the road, and that's unfortunate because now here's they treated it as like a closed track testing almost.
Mm-hmm.
They closed down the Autobahn, so they allowed these guys these full speed runs. Now that's the advantage that they had over, you know, these modern day attempts.
Right, you can't close interstate like that.
No, well, there are cars that may very well could go faster than 268 miles per hour. They can't do it with other traffic around it. Just, you just can't do it.
It's, yeah.
If you've ever watched that video of that Bugatti going 250 or whatever,
yeah,
the speed that that thing passes the camera, you cannot imagine how fast 250 looks when you're standing still.
I have a hard time imagining people driving those.
It's unbelievable. So imagine 268 in something that was built in 1932
mm-hmm.
on, you know, the smaller, thinner tires. You know, it's still a big, heavy car, but like I said, this one, Bernard's car didn't have enough downforce.
Mm-hmm.
And he caught a crosswind, and unfortunately his car flipped over, and he died on that day.
Yes.
And that's terribly unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and this was his second run, because I think what happened was he made one run and, you know, it was successful. Then the Mercedes driver made another run, which broke his record. And this is when Bernard went back out to try to break the record again. So he's trying to break his own record, you know, the third time that day, I guess it would be what it was, really,
right.
If that makes any sense.
It does. The driver we're talking about, the Benz, the Mercedes-Benz W125.
Yeah.
That is Rudolph. How did you say it? Caracciola?
I think so. Caracciola.
Okay. Now, he had hit right at 268.8,
mm-hmm.
and he had a V12 engine in there as well, of course. I don't know what else.
So you're talking about 0.4 of a mile per hour.
That's it.
That's it. And he, so then Bernard's trying to go out and top him on it.
Well, I mean, can you imagine you're in this one-day duel to be the world's fastest man?
Ben, if you want to read something really fascinating, look into a story about the account of what happened on the day that Bernard Rosemeyer died. It's really, really interesting to hear what they say about the way it felt to drive that fast on that road, because they're going under overpasses.
Mm-hmm.
They're on, you know, poured concrete.
Yeah.
They said that every crack, you know, just the seams in the road. And they're clean seams. They're not rough by any means.
Yeah, but just like natural wear.
They said that those felt like you're hitting a wall every time you hit one of those things with the tires. It was just that you know shuddering.
There's got to be so much friction each time.
They said that trying to go through the overpasses, you know, you're going through a tunnel, and he said you could, you know, at that speed, you can see it far, far ahead, right?
Yeah.
Because the road is, this part of the road is built for extreme high speed, or capable of having extreme high speeds on it, and they said that it was like threading a needle at that point, because, you know, you aim yourself for that tunnel.
Yeah.
And by the time you get to it, which is faster than you might think, of course, it feels like you're threading a needle.
I mean, how much time passes? How far do you go each time you blink?
Well,
you
know? we talked about the Indy drivers who, well, okay, we pretty much know, right? Because about 40 feet, I think.
Yeah,
for
like 37 to 40.
When you're traveling at like 235 or 240, I think.
Wow.
And yeah. So you're talking probably like 45 feet or something like that.
That's
just
amazing.
Just a ballpark. And that's every time you blink. So that's one tenth of 1 second.
Oh, man.
I know. That's incredible.
You've got to have somebody sitting shotgun to hold your eyes.
Yeah, I would think that they've got their eyes wide open through that whole thing. That's probably one of those cases where you're forgetting to breathe.
Yeah, the fight or flight response kicks in.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, would you have ever guessed? I mean, that's to me, that was remarkable that these guys, 72 years ago, did I say? 72?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
72 years ago, they break the record, and it probably will stand. Until they do another, you know, shut down the road.
Until they're able to shut it down. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't see them really doing that in the future.
Well, it would be difficult to do so, because if you think about the enormous cost involved,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is literally the interstate system of Germany.
Yeah. Well, this was, you know, this at the time.
Right. Not so many cars.
Well, it's also, you know, here you've got the Auto Union guys, you've got the Mercedes guys. Mm-hmm. They're both vying for the top end in Formula One, which, you know, they still are, you know, not Audi, but you got Mercedes, you've got other manufacturers that are still top end Formula One, but these were the top end race cars of the day. They're going for, I mean, I'll clean this up a bit, but this is just a peeing contest between the two. Hey, how's that, Ben?
Yeah,
you know
good.
What I'm getting at, right?
Yeah,
okay.
I know what you mean.
They're between the two of them saying, you know, we can go just a little bit faster.
Sure.
Who's going to set this record? Because it's going to be a world record.
And it was a battle of giants that day.
Yeah, it definitely was.
And it still stands today. Fortunately for everybody involved, the Autobahn is still a place do you think we busted some of the bigger
misconceptions? Yeah, I think the biggest one was just everywhere is unlimited.
Not true. Yeah.
Not true. And that it's dangerous.
Yeah. Well, that's
not necessarily true.
Yeah. I'm doing a lot of shrugging.
Yeah, yeah.
But the caveat, the asterisk added to the end of that sentence that is kind of a downer, is that there are really places in Germany where you can drive as fast as you want.
Yes.
Now, you shouldn't eat while you're doing it because they will pull you over.
Mm-hmm.
You should be safe. There are a lot of laws that you probably want to catch up on if you're not familiar with them.
Oh, for sure. You don't want to be busted on something simple like that.
Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine? But also, the good thing is, the thing to walk away with is that, my friends, if you want this bad enough, you can do it.
Yeah, arrange a trip, rent a car, do whatever you have to do.
And now that we have just gone ahead and given somebody a new life goal, Scott, you want to do some listener mail?
I would love to.
All right, Scott, this one is going to be from Tina from Seattle, and she's got a quick question. I'm going to defer it to you.
Okay.
All right. Hi, Scott and Ben. Blah, 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 blah. You guys are okay. So, no, I'm kidding. She's a very, very nice letter. Let's cut to the chase. I am a car enthusiast and love learning about cars and especially love driving different cars. Recently, I drove a friend's BMW, as well as a friend's 1990 VW Golf. I noticed that the reverse gear for both cars were located to the left of the first gear. The reverse gear for both cars were located to the left of the first gear, while every other manual transmission car that I've driven, including my own, has the reverse gear in the bottom right corner. Why is this?
Mm. All right, that's just a simple matter of transmission manufacturers and where they decide to put that reverse gear location. It's just a linkage thing, really.
Mm-hmm.
There's not anything really terribly different about it. It still acts the same, of course. But you'll notice that there's also a lockout, so you don't accidentally shift into reverse. Because it would be easy enough to pull the gear shift towards your leg, shift it up into what would be reverse gear instead of first gear. So they have a lockout usually in that case, which is a ring that you would pull up on the stick shift, or sometimes you push down on the shift knob and then push it over and up, so that you don't accidentally shift into reverse versus first gear. But really, it's just a matter of the way the manufacturer lays out that pattern.
So there's no like institutional standard or law or anything.
No, nothing like that. I guess they could put it wherever they want, really. But I think it's just something that's carried over from a long time ago and is still there.
Well, Tina also added that her friends have commented without thinking they've accidentally gone forward when they meant to go in reverse.
Really?
And I can see myself doing the same as well if I were to switch back and forth between cars.
I could see accidentally going forward instead of in reverse, but I can't see I could with the lockout the way it is.
Yeah.
You can't unless it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's broken in some way, the adjustment. I would say that you wouldn't be sitting in the light and then inadvertently go in reverse. That just wouldn't happen because you would have to push down on the stick shift and then then shift it into reverse, or you have to pull up on that ring that I was telling you about that's below the shift knob, pull it up and then shift in reverse. So, I could understand, though, you think you got it in reverse and you got it in first, but not the other way around.
So, yeah, that's okay.
You got it?
Yeah, I think.
So, that's a good question, though, because it's just really a manufacturer choice.
Okay, so Tina, thanks for writing in. We hope that we got back to you with an adequate answer there for these kind of little car mysteries. Now, guys, our time here is up. Scott and I have to go do some stuff, and we still have to drive the speed limit over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, that's right.
What's
yeah.
that about?
That's too slow is what it is.
All right, so we're going to head out. If you have a car mystery for us that you'd like to know more about, you can look us up on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at CarStuffHSW. You can check out Scott's awesome blog, which is on our website. And on our website, we have the answer to everything, about... I'm sorry you caught me. Everything about automobiles that you would like to know.
Even the top speeds article that we just mentioned and how the Autobahn works. And I think even on my blog, I've got a couple of things about the Autobahn, rather. So, check it out. Those are both good sources.
And if for some reason you can't find what you're looking for, go ahead and send us an email directly at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.